sometimes I feel so much pressure about this podcast that I was desperate to start. And I took that giant step to start it. But it's all self-inflicted, but I know that people listen to this podcast. Not a lot, but it's had 188 plays, so I know people are listening. And sometimes I feel so much pressure for it to be perfect. And that's why in the last episode, I left my coughs in. I left sniffling in. It's allergy season. I'm going to cough and sniffle. So instead of spending, you know, 45 minutes to an hour editing all of that out of the clips, I've let it out too raw. So you could hear that I have allergies. I'm coughing and I'm sneezing. I'm on Flonase, I'm still coughing and sneezing. I'm on Mucinex, I'm still coughing and sneezing. That's been an effort to be transparent and more real, and it just saves time. Like, why cut out coughs? We all cough, we know it's a thing. We all sniffle, we know it's a thing. Why cut those out so you have a false idea that, okay, you might think that I don't suffer allergies during allergy season when I do, and not that really means anything, it just means I'm a normal human being. But it's about curating an image, right? I don't want to curate an image. I want to be me, raw, all the way me. So that's why I started cursing more in the podcast. That's why I started leaving things like swallowing and when my voice gets dry and when I go down to vocal fry, perhaps, and all these things. I started leaving them in because it's real. And I think people listen to podcasts because they want the real. And we can all tell the difference between podcasts that are edited to death and podcasts that are real. So I'm leaving all this shit in. I'm even going to start to leave stutters in. I don't have a stutter problem anymore. I did when I was a child. But when I get to speaking quickly and my brain moves much faster than my mouth can, even though I have some men in my past who might tell you otherwise, catch. It's the truth. So I will stutter sometimes and I'm excited and passionate and start talking very quickly because my brain is moving at the speed of light and my lips cannot keep up. So the pressure that I put on myself, it's self-inflicted, is for these podcasts to be perfect and for me to have some zinger point moment, some gotcha, some hot take moment that is brilliant, that will trend, that will go viral, you know, some moment that when I do the text to speech, the speech to text audio visual transfer, that it'll give me a great shot that I can put on my Instagram feed, you know. The bullshit, you know, the quote that'll go around the internet in 10 million seconds and make me famous. 10 million seconds. What am I doing? That'll go around the internet in 1 second and make me, you know, viral and famous and respected and whatever. All of that is ego. So I'm coming to you as I am for who I am. I was before. You were getting the real Billy before, but this is going to be, and I started with the last podcast and the podcast before, and let me tell you, I've never edited out any real content. I've just edited out coughs, sniffles, if I repeated a word, things like that, long pauses that are where I'm thinking, I would edit those out. Well, those are going to stay in now, so that if I'm trying to think of a different word, I'll leave the pause in. I'll just leave all those in because that's real, right? It's real life. And if I were speaking in front of you, you would see the cough. That's the other thing. If we were talking face to face, which I think the goal of podcasting, or one of the reasons that we podcast, is because we want to have that connection. And when you're listening to me in your car, on your phone, with the phone on your chest in your bed under the cover, or I'm on your computer, or whatever you're listening to this to, it's like I'm sitting next to you, friend. And I do like to think of you as my friend, even if I don't know you, because I'm reaching out with my voice and my spirit to you. You would hear the cough. I would have to cough in your presence. I would have to sniffle in your presence. You would hear these things. So that's why I'm doing them here, because we do them in real life, so I'm going to do them here. And that's it for this segment. Just want to say it's going to be much more real from now on with coughing, sneezing, sniffling, yawning. I yawned twice in that last podcast. That's definitely something I would have edited out before, but now it stays. Everything will stay except for me going to the bathroom. It ain't that kind of podcast, kids. Captain Marvel, let's jump into it. So I saw the film, finally. Something was pulling at me to go see it. However, I did wait for it to get to the dollar theater. So I saw Captain Marvel for $3. That was for many reasons. One, films are just too expensive these days. Motion pictures. So I usually tend to wait for them to come out on streaming or go to the dollar theater. Because I think films are designed and the cinematography is designed as such, hopefully, so that it is best received in a theater, in a large screen, and no one's home theater as many. I've been in some luxurious home theaters, but they cannot give you the ratio of being in an actual movie theater, right? So the films are meant... They're not designed to be digested on your phone or on your tablet or on your 60-inch television screen at home. They're designed to be seen on a gigantic movie screen. So a film like that, especially a superhero movie, I want to see in a theater if I'm going to go see it. So I went to the Dollar Theater to see Captain Marvel, even though it is a white female-led narrative, which... I have a semi-permanent rule these days that I'm supporting the performance of blackness and supporting blackness in everything I go see and everything I read and everything I do. So I'm trying to not give my dollars, which capitalism recognizes and which the film industry recognizes, I'm trying to not give my money towards white-led narratives, solely white-led narratives or narratives that... Narratives that have a white protagonist. So that's where my energies are going. But however, something told me I needed to go see this movie. So I went to go see Captain Marvel. Despite what I was seeing in the trailers and what I was seeing on the internet. And I tweeted this to, I can't remember right now who produced. I know it's Marvel, but I was tweeting this to... Whatever the production company is that made the film, I was hoping they could go back and do some ADR on Brie Larson's voice. To me, she does not have a commanding, authoritative voice like a Gal Gadot, like just any, like a Sigourney Weaver. She does not have a grounded, solid, like even Annette Bening in this film. And that's because Annette Bening has theatrical training. She doesn't have a voice that commands authority, respect, or pulls fear out of you. You know, like you hear Gal Gadot talk and you're like, this girl can kick my ass. Like this woman has authority. She's an Amazon, right? Before she even moves her body, her voice commands respect. Brie Larson has the voice of a 7-year-old brat. So I wasn't happy with that, and I thought, okay, you need to go back and do some ADR, have her re-record it, let's get that figured out. That didn't happen. So that was the number one thing that bothered me, was her voice. I'll get to everyone else in the movie, but since I've already gone into talking about her, we'll just talk about Brie Larson. I wasn't feeling her. I'm not feeling her look. I'm not feeling her height. I wasn't feeling her acting. I think she can't act her way out of a paper bag. This is my opinion as an actor with a terminal graduate degree in this field with a union. I'm a card-carrying member of the Actors Union. She does not cut it for me as the lead in a superhero film. There is nothing that she was giving me that elicited excitement or respect or just not intimidated by her at all. Having said that,
Everyone else in the movie I thought was fantastic. Like her whole, I think they surrounded her with the best actors that far surpassed her, right? Jude Law, amazing actor that brings such intensity that you love to hate, and then you find out at the end something about, well, the movie's been out for a while, so I'll just go ahead and say it. So Jude Law turns out to be a villain, right? You think he's a hero, he turns out to be a villain. Great actor in that role, great physical presence, great voice. Samuel L. Jackson is always amazing. Again, commanding voice, commanding presence, funny, intense. Got his ass kicked a lot in this movie, which we can talk about that. Often in these female-led superhero films, men have to be like constantly undercut for some reason in the writing to heighten the woman, which obviously I think is a response to long-held misogyny in films where the Lois Lane or the April O'Neil or the female character was always needing to be rescued or helped. So then we turn that on its head and sort of turn a toxic masculinity on its head in the writing, where we make it a female toxic place where the men have to be now rescued, when it's like, couldn't we just make it like no one needs to be rescued like that and she just fights on her own? But whatever, that's another discussion. He was getting his ass kicked a lot, which I was kind of like, the semiotics of this white woman like constantly saving this black male, didn't really like that, but we'll move on. Lashana Lynch, who plays the, this is really interesting. So Lashana Lynch is an African-American actress who plays Carol Danvers, who is Captain Marvel. We have all these flashbacks, and Lashana Lynch is the quote-unquote best friend of the Carol Danvers character in the show. And she has a daughter, and Carol Danvers is shown as her best friend, and they love each other. And she's like an aunt to Lashana Lynch's daughter. Clip from the intense relationship that these two women had in this movie, it echoed the homoerotic themes of Tom Cruise and Val Kilmer in Top Gun. They were both fighter jet pilots. It was very much that same relationship. They would act in a jocular manner with each other, which I understood, but it kind of bothered me simultaneously. I don't like, and this is why I don't like feminism. Feminism tends to think that equality for women is making them act with toxic masculinity. There's this weird thing in feminism that feminism is seeking white male hegemony, not womanism, which on a side note is why the Women's March was called the Women's March and not the Feminist March. Feminism is white supremacy. Feminism is white women seeking the same privilege that white men have. Because instead of this being what it looked like and what it felt like, and there have been other people who've said this same thing as I found out, who felt this way. And I purposefully did not read anything on Captain Marvel before I saw it. I wanted to have my opinions and not the opinions of someone else. The relationship of Lashana Lynch and Brie Larson in this movie was a queer-coded relationship. I feel like it must have had a vision. The first draft of this script were these women being lesbian lovers, and a studio head changed it to best friends. It just feels that way. If this is not the truth, I would be shocked. Everything about this relationship is queer. They're written like two lesbians. They're written like two plaid shirt wearing, awesome, proud dykes. And then they're best friends instead of being lovers. They sleep in the same house. And there's a line that alludes to them sleeping in the same bed. I mean, they're everything but saying we are gay. We are a gay couple. And so what I feel like is they were written lesbian, and then somebody had to come in. A studio head said, they can't be gay, make them best friends. And that really saddened me, that we're in 2019 and we still can't have two open lesbians in a relationship in a superhero movie. Okay, cool. So that bothered me. So there's that. But also, Lashana Lynch is an amazing actress who also has a commanding voice, brings a presence to the screen that Brie Larson could not match in 10 million years. I just kept thinking the whole movie, this should be reversed. Lashana Lynch should be Captain Marvel, and Brie Larson should be her best friend with the child. Because Brie Larson is not scaring anybody. She's not intimidating at all. When she does her superhero stance, I'm like, meh. But as soon as Lashana Lynch started beating, kicking ass on this spaceship in this scene, you're like, yes, that is the intensity I needed to see. She is bringing the Dora Milaje action. She is bringing a power and a strength and an acting intensity that Brie Larson could not get on her best day. So it also bothered me, the semiotics of, here are these two black people, Samuel L. Jackson and Lashana Lynch, who are side characters once again, so that whiteness can be the hero, which was Brie Larson. So once again, this, we're coming back full circle to what white feminism does, which is just try to attain white male hegemony for white women. Wonder Woman does not do that, because I think as soon as I say that, people say, well, what about Wonder Woman? If you go back and look at Wonder Woman, the Amazons are also black, right? There are black Amazons, there are Asian Amazons. And if you go back to Wonder Woman comic book canon, let me pull out my comic book nerd credentials. Wonder Woman has a sister who is black. Her name is Nubia, Hippolyta's other daughter, that now the DC Universe has screwed up now that they've changed Wonder Woman's origin. But in the comic book, Wonder Woman has a black sister who has all of her same powers, who has the Sword of Mars, which counteracts Diana's lasso. The only thing in the universe that can counteract her lasso is the sword of her black sister. Catch. But anyway, back to Captain Marvel. The plot was interesting. I liked the plot, the way it was written, in that it is about how, you know, your true self is what you need to bring forward to combat and to win. She was being hampered by the enemy, which kind of also mirrored She-Ra's journey in the cartoon, which I thought she was. Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, had been captured and lied to in her whole sort of upbringing on this alien planet. And she was captured by an evil race, but told that evil was good. And she was really fighting on behalf of this master race, alien life that is evil, and trying to oppress the marginalized creatures, which are called the Skrull. Much like Force Captain Adora, who was captured by the evil horde and convinced that evil was good, and was told that she needed to oppress the people of Etheria. So Carol Danvers learns, like Force Captain Adora did, that she was actually fighting on the side of evil, and switches up and joins the side for good, which are the Skrull and the people of Etheria, respectively, and starts to fight for good. And comes into Force Captain Adora, has to discover her power and come into her own power. She-Ra, Carol Danvers, discovers that what she was being trained to suppress, her photon powers and her her like jocular attitude and her emotion, is actually what her strength was. And that was interesting. I thought that was written well, because often, you know, toxic masculinity says that women are emotional and you need to have logic without emotion, which is insane. You can't do that. You can't split your mind and devoid logic of emotion unless you want to become schizophrenic and disassociative. You have to use, you know, logic without emotion is how you get to the Holocaust. That's how you get to slavery. Well, of course we can just use people as capital, and of course we can use chattel slavery. Makes sense, because we'll build a whole economy based on breeding people and enslaving them to build this country. That's what happens when you have logic without emotion, right? So I think the lesson of the movie is that women can bring their whole selves to the table, and it is not only can, but it is normative. That if you, as a woman, as a marginalized person, as a black person, as a queer person, you bring your whole self to the table, and that is how you will shine and combat toxic masculinity, not by trying to be like a toxic male. Which was also funny then, because even though that's the message of the script, in the acting at least, or in how it was being directed, both the Carol Danvers character and the actress Lashana Lynch's character, can't remember the character's name, So I'll just use the actors. Both Brie Larson and Lashana Lynch were acting pretty toxically masculine, like I said, in that Top Gun, Maverick and Iceman relationship in their characters as fighter pilots. They were acting toxically masculine, and that seems to be what feminism's answer to equality, which is a problem. I hate that. I really hate that. Annette Bening was fabulous as both Mar-Vell and then as the alien entity that is taking the shape of Mar-Vell in Brie Larson's dreams. Thought that was brilliant. And she, for people who want to think that I'm racist, which is ridiculous, Annette Bening, for example, in her younger days, would have been a brilliant Captain Marvel. I would have loved to have seen her as Captain Marvel. She commands a presence. She has a groundedness. She has a voice that instills fear. A voice that lets you know, don't fuck with this woman. Annette Bening brings a presence and a gravitas. That's the word I was looking for. She has the gravitas that Brie Larson does not, that a superhero must have to command that presence. I had some more thoughts on Captain Marvel. So, yes, Annette Bening has a gravitas that Brie Larson perhaps someday will develop, but she does not have it right now. And I really don't care that she's won an Academy Award, because the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences is still predominantly white, cisgender males, so I don't judge acting by their metrics, which, according to Kathy Griffin, amounts to, are they fuckable or not? She is quoted as saying, when she was sitting next to a movie film executive who was in the voting academy, that they were talking about, you know, possible leads for a television show. And Kathy Griffin was throwing out names of actresses, respected white actresses, and I'm sure black actresses also. But this executive was saying to her, they're not fuckable. She's not fuckable. She's too old. She's unfuckable. So according to her and several other sources, a lot of the women who tend to win Oscars, a lot of the white women who tend to win Oscars are apparently, along with being deemed talented by the Academy, are picked because of their quote-unquote, from Kathy Griffin, fuckworthiness, which is disgusting and obviously white toxic masculinity, clearly. And that's not to say they're not talented, but that is a factor that goes into their decision-making. Whether or not a straight man would want to have sex with you does not go into my factoring, whether or not you're talented. It's, are you believable in the role? And do you bring the attributes that the role demands, that the written role demands? And the answer is no on both counts for me and Brie Larson. So those are my thoughts on that. If I had to give a movie a grade as a professor, I have to grade things, I would give it a B+. And that's because of the surrounding cast. I think her actors around her are stellar. But I think the fact that the lead actor in the film is severely lacking brings it to a B+ instead of an A-, or an A. I would have given it if a person who fit the role was in the role. For instance, let's rewind back. If this were 15, 20 years ago, and this were Annette Bening playing Carol Danvers, it would be an A+. Would be an A+. If everything else remained the same, of course, Mar-Vell would have to be somebody else. If everything else remained the same and Annette Bening was Mar-Vell, or say Michelle Pfeiffer, or say, I don't know, Mary Steenburgen, I could name you off 15 actresses. Viola Davis today, someone who should have played Storm, Angela Bassett. If any of those actresses were in this role back when they were early 20s, early 30s, it would be an A+ film. But today, you know, had Gal Gadot played Captain Marvel instead of Wonder Woman, this would be an A movie. Just Brie Larson is not it. So that makes it a B. There you go. Those are my marvelous thoughts, part 2. have had to change my approach with what I encounter in my Twitter feed. Right after the Ferguson protests, after Mike Brown was shot and left to bleed in the street for over 3 hours before an ambulance arrived, there was an immediacy in seeing everything that happened on Twitter almost in real time, because you needed to be able to see it, to report it, to tweet it back out, to retweet it, to put your opinion on it, and to raise awareness and to get the news out there. Now, what's happening is, like with Chekezia Simmons and the Waffle House, harassment of her and her being stripped topless by police and manhandled and beat on the ground in a Waffle House, to this recent shooting of a black woman in Texas, and I don't have her name right now, who was shot to death by cops while she was screaming, "I'm pregnant." And there are different reports as to whether she was pregnant or not, but I'm not even interested in that because that's just victim blaming and victimization. She was murdered in public and shot to death by a cop, and she was unarmed. And she was on the ground, and he was standing up. So for all practical purposes, she had been subdued, and he shot her to death. Multiple times. 4 or 5 times. You can watch the video. My point right here is that I have to decide and choose whether I'm going to re-traumatize myself by retweeting archived violence against black bodies, or if I'm just going to talk about it and not share the image. And for right now, this might change as strategies change, your point of attack changes. So sometimes I retweet and share these videos, which are violence against black bodies, to impress upon my white allies, look at what is happening. When white America saw Bloody Sunday on television, that changed things. That brought white allies to the forefront, made them act. They saw these black bodies being beaten on television, and they said, that's enough, this shall not stand, right? In a way, we're becoming desensitized to that. And it is self-harm for me to keep seeing myself and to keep retweeting and resharing these videos of black violence of violence being done to black bodies by the white state. I'm getting tripped up even in saying it because it's affecting me so. In resharing these videos of white violence upon black bodies enabled by the state, enacted by the state against taxpaying black unarmed citizens who are being shot to death, choked out in the street with Eric Garner, shot to death and left to bleed in the street with Mike Brown, handcuffed and manhandled down to the ground with Sandra Bland, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The list goes on and on. John Crawford shot to death in the Walmart in Beaver Creek, Ohio, where I went to school. In a way, we're desensitizing the public and normalizing this violence by making it mundane, by sharing it over and over and over again. So it's a balance, and I'm trying to figure out what that balance is of when do I share the video that's another black body being brutalized, and when do I say, you know what, I got to step away from that today for self-care and to not re-traumatize myself and my audience and my fellow people of color. I'm not going to share that video of this black person being brutalized. I'll talk about it so you can intellectually meet that topic, but I'm not going to share the video. And, you know, like I said, with strategy, sometimes I will share it for effect because you need to be shocked by it. You need to be shocked into action. You need to be terrified and disgusted and outraged by the violence inflicted upon women, black women, and black people, period, who are unarmed and almost every situation they're unarmed. And these agents of violence that are enabled by the state and authorized and licensed to kill us, Black American taxpayers, our civil servants, have been deputized to murder us in the street, unarmed, because we're living and breathing, because we're walking down the street. Hell, it's not even deputized citizens. You know, Zimmerman wasn't a cop. Zimmerman wasn't a cop at all when he shot Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Martin was walking down the street with Skittles and a bottle of tea, having visited his father. And Zimmerman was determined by a court that he was completely justified in shooting Trayvon Martin to death after he attacked Trayvon Martin. So it's not even, you know, it gets worse and worse as I just talk it out. It's not even deputized agents of the state only. It's any white person who wants to pick up a gun. Over and over again, Black people are told by example, by action, by this country, that any white person has the right to pick up a firearm, murder you, attack you, murder you, and then say they were scared. They have the weapon, we don't. But they are scared by our being, by our existing, by us breathing, and they have the right to shoot us. It's justified. They have the right to, quote unquote, stand their ground and shoot us to death because they're scared of the color of our skin and the fact that we have the audacity to live and move and have our being in this country that we built. So yeah, I have a problem of sharing these images and these videos of violence, and I have to work in my mind back and forth, is this strategy today or is this self-care? How do I navigate that? Just another micro and macro racial aggression of being Black in America. The Great Flood has spoken.